Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to CeraBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We're champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to CeraBoost. And on this week's episode, we are going to talk about resentment, unraveling emotions and mental health implications. I know resentment is not an easy topic to talk about, especially when we talk about happiness. But then I think that's even more important because we need to learn about resentment as is another aspect to be able to manage our happiness. And today we have a very lovely guest on our show, Alan N. Schwartz. He has been very patient with us through the process. I'm really excited to talk to him about this topic. And I would love to introduce Alan a bit more, and then we'll get to know Alan through his own words very soon. He writes articles for Substack as DocTalk, Explorations in Psychotherapy, and for WordPress also as DocTalk, Explorations in Psychotherapy. His PhD is in social psychology from Yeshiva University in New York City, and he has psychoanalytic certification from a postgraduate institute in New York City called NPAP. He has years of experience working in psychiatry and then in his private psychotherapy practice. He was interviewed after 9/11 by The Guardian in an article called New York on the Couch. He has also been interviewed on a variety of radio and television broadcasts. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alan.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I am very curious about your professional journey because it seems to me like you've gone through a lot in your career so far. And, you know, you've done a lot of engagement with different sorts of platforms. So I wonder what happened there, you know, how your career unfolded and why you chose to do this work.
I chose to do this work because it's I was a youngster. I knew that I wanted to be of service, and I've always been fascinated by people's emotions and people's ways of thinking. So I set out on my journey, first in college and then in graduate school, to study various aspects of psychology and social psychology because my particular interest was in the way people interact with each other and in the way organizations interact with each other.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds fascinating. And, you know, because we talk about the way that people interact with each other, and today we talk about resentment, and, you know, resentment comes from interactions. I think that's quite interrelated. So we'll learn a lot from you in this regard. Before we get to the topic, we have a section called Have You Met Alan? We're going to get to know you a bit better through some of your favorite things. The first thing I would like to ask is, what is your favorite book recently?
My favorite book, first of all, I have many favorite books. I've thought about this. But the one that seems, number one, most appropriate for this broadcast to me, and that is also just fascinating for everybody to read, is a true story about, the title of the book is Tuesdays at Maury's, and it's written by Mitch Ablom, and it's, again, a true story. And Maury, whose name coincidentally was Maury Schwartz, no relation, had a wonderful career as a professor of sociology at Brandeis University in Massachusetts. He was loved by his students, and He worked there for decades and decades. There was this one particular student, Rich Ablom, who he and Maury Schwartz developed a close relationship, and they greatly admired each other. One of the wonderful things about Maury was that he truly embraced life. He truly embraced happiness. And when he got the deadly, tragic diagnosis of ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, which is horrible because the patient wastes away. He describes in his interviews with Mitch how he thought to himself, I can be a victim or I can embrace what's happening to me because everybody dies. So why not have my experience recorded? And that's where Mitch came in. And so the story evolves of how literally as Maury wastes away, he continues to embrace his life. And Mitch came practically to be his home nurse, literally cleaning his diapers, holding him, kissing him on the forehead, embracing him. It's just an extraordinary, extraordinary story. And this defines happiness because, again, he embraced life and in a happy way. One of his great losses when he got this disease was that he could no longer dance. And as a professor, he would go to various student activities where students dance with each other. He danced alone on the dance floor, and all of the students would applaud him. So this was an amazing man. He defines happiness, and I really recommend that everybody read this book.
Yeah, I really love that book as well. And I love that you told us the backstory because I do remember it's a great read and I probably have to read it again, but didn't really know much detail about the story until now. So that's really fascinating to hear. And thank you for that. Great recommendation. Now, what is a movie that you have enjoyed recently?
Well, hands down, Oppenheimer.
Ah.
Yes. I was born in 1942, and a lot of what happens in the movie occurred during my early life. And there were certain aspects of it that I learned in school, but there were also aspects of it that I remember the McCarthy era, where even though McCarthy isn't mentioned in the movie, he's omnipresent. Here is this man, Oppenheimer, who literally, through his efforts, brought World War II to an end, tragically, with a nuclear bomb. And then the forces unleashed by McCarthy during the early 1950s were turned on him because he happened to know, in a friendly way, a few people who embraced communist ideology. He was never a member of the Communist Party and never embraced communism. In actuality, he was fearful that the Soviet Union would develop the bomb, which in the end, he forecast, and in the end, that's what happened. And when he tried to present President Truman with his apprehensiveness about the bomb, President Truman called him a crybaby. So here was this super brilliant man who was treated unfairly. In any case, it's a wonderful, dramatic movie, and that too, I heartily recommend.
Yeah, thank you for that recommendation. It's good to hear perspectives as well, you know, because a lot of people on our show have talked about it, the movie actually, but you know, you have a very different angle of looking at it. So that's quite interesting to hear. Thank you for sharing. And now this next question is about podcast, and lots of our guests actually don't listen to podcasts. I wonder if you do listen to podcasts, and if you do, what is a show that you have been enjoying recently?
My all-time favorite podcast is not related to psychology in the least. It's called Star Talk. And the host is Neil deGrasse Tyson, an astrophysicist. Ever since I was a kid, I loved to read about the heavens and was fascinated, and in the most entertaining way possible, he goes into all of it, the most complex ideas, but in a way that is so entertaining that everyone can understand what he talks about. He also has guest speakers, and he has, as a co-host, a stand-up comedian whose name I don't recall at this moment, and it just altogether adds to, you know, an atmosphere of both lightheartedness, but profoundly important information. Again, I heartily recommend it, and of course, it's on YouTube. So, Star Talk.
Yeah.
Again, something everyone should watch.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Thank you for sharing. It sounds really
and
fun.
And one more thing about that. He points out that we only know 4% of the universe. And the more telescopes we launch into orbit, and the more we learn, we still don't know more than that 4%, because all this exploration opens up new mysteries and ever new mysteries. So I find it fascinating.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. Next question is about your role model. If you have one, who is this person?
By far, a great psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, who's very old, only now late in his 80s, and his name is Irvin Yalom, Y-A-L-O-M. And he has written a vast number of books, case studies, but for the everyday reader. And he has also written wonderful novels. He's also a super brilliant man. And for example, one of his works is called the Spinoza Problem, another, the Schopenhauer here, Schopenhauer Cure. And again, through these novels, he explores human psychology by going back into history. His He also has podcasts on YouTube that you would have to, you know, look for, and they are interviews that he has done, live interviews with patients. This goes back a long time, of course, because now he's very elderly, but he's my role model. Psychiatrist, psychoanalyst. And, you know, they say psychoanalysis has passed its prime. No, it's alive and well.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And last question in this part, what is a course you've completed that really inspired you? And I know probably, you know, it's been a while since you took any course, but I'm sure you remember something. Yeah.
There was at NPAP in my psychoanalytic studies, a brilliant psychoanalyst by the name of Esther Medeker. She was in her late 90s, and she was conducting this course out of her home, her living room, as sharp as a tack. She lived to 100, by the way. She also embraced life. And she lived alone. Her son came to visit, but she was on her own. In any case, each of us presented cases, real cases, that the class then analyzed, led by Esther Medeker. And I will never forget one case that a student was presenting that involved a patient, his psychoanalytic patient, who the student made the mistake of saying is dying. The class fell silent, and Dr. Medeker gave him a sharp look and said, "Who said he's dying?" What the student was implying was that this was an elderly patient and therefore dying. And boy, she, in her brilliant way, put a stop to that. She was a colleague of Anna Freud years back in Vienna. She was a student, I should say, of Anna Freud. So she was awesome. And that was a class I'll never forget.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Thank you so much for sharing lots of details about you and, you know, your interest areas and things that have happened in your life, actually. We've gotten to know you so much better now. And so let's talk about today's topic. You know, we're here to talk about happiness. That's what the show is about. But today's topic, it can kind of sound contrasting to happiness, which is resentment. So we'll explore, you know, the different aspects of it. First things first, let's talk about happiness, because this is something that each of us has a very different definition of. So, Alan, what does happiness mean to you?
Happiness is difficult to define. Everybody has a different definition. But one thing I know for sure, and this doesn't even involve patients I work with, but friends of mine, colleagues, and my own life, is that there's no such thing as permanent happiness. We get a sense of satisfaction from the things we do. And that satisfaction provides a sense of accomplishment. And that's why I chose, and this was my values, to do something which was of service and is of service to other people. That has always made me happy. Do I walk around happy all the time and every day? No, because our moods fluctuate. Life happens. And I would say that happiness is a transitory state. And I'll add one more thing about happiness. Happiness, this sense of satisfaction, also comes from relationships. And that's the key to life. It is having important relationships. Now, they can be a friend, close friends. They can be important family members. There's a whole thing, you know, there's nothing to say that a relationship has to be with a certain number of people or with a certain person in particular. But I know relationships have been very important to me. And my wife passed away. She was enormously important to me. But I've continued in close relationships with friends of mine and people I've known for years. And that provides me with a real sense of satisfaction and happiness in my life.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your wife, but I'm glad to hear that you're continuing on building other relationships and, you know, like, you know, building the sources of happiness around other kinds of relationship as well, because that is important, right? We don't know what's going to happen in life. It's hard to predict. And some relationships that meant a lot to us sometimes don't last because of that reason, you know. But I think what you talked about happiness there really resonate probably with a lot of people in our audience, especially because if they are tuning into a show about happiness, I'm sure they would agree. You know, it's not a permanent state and it's not something that we have all the time. I think the key is to learn to manage different aspects of it. So we add to the wealth of happiness in our lives rather than say, you know, I want to be happy all the time, because that's not going to happen. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, with your long career and, you know, what a rich life you've had, you definitely have noticed certain things that people probably get wrong about happiness. You sort of touched on that already where you said, you know, it's not a permanent thing. Some people think you need to be happy all the time. That's not the case. But I wonder what you think to be some of the other misconceptions people might have about happiness.
Well, one is that there is this belief. Well, there's a number of incorrect beliefs about happiness. One, and this is particularly American and maybe the Western world in general, that if you are very wealthy, you're happy. We know that it's not true. Another one is that if you achieve great success, if you invented the ship SpaceX, I forget the name of the inventor, But no, fame and huge success does not create happiness. Rather, it is an inner sense that you're accomplishing something important, that something that coincides with your values. You can be a poor person and feel happy. It's not money. I think there are Buddhist sayings about that. It's not money. It's not materialism. It's not envying the things that other people have, like your neighbor's fancy car. perhaps, that's just one example, or you're not having a car at all. No. You can have no car and no money and be happy. So it is not the material success, fame, or wealth that people mistakenly believe it is. Mm-hmm. They think if I can achieve those things, they'll be happy. Here's another class I took. This was undergraduate in psychology. The professor said, you know, I started out wanting to get my bachelor's degree. I thought that would make me happy because I've accomplished something. He graduated, he got his bachelor's degree. No. So then he thought, let me go for my master's degree in psychology. No. Would he got that? No. Let me go for my PhD in psychology. That's challenging. That'll make me happy. No. No. I know I'm going to be like Sigmund Freud. I'm going to become a psychoanalyst. And he did. No. All of these things were not the key to happiness. It was when he married and had children, that's when he became a happy person.
I think that's perspective right there that you just mentioned, right? Because a lot of people in this day and age are thinking, you know, I need to own this, I need to own that, or I need to achieve this and that to be happy. And, you know, to be honest, me sometimes, I think about that because it's like this societal pressure and this expectation and, you know, in this generation, social media is such a big thing and everyone is sort of like participating in this invisible competition to see, you know, who has the most, amount of things or who does the coolest things. And I think that is not the point of happiness, just like you were saying. And I think that's a really important message for our audience. It needs to get reaffirmed, you know, every single time, because even though we've sort of listened to different angles of this message, the more I hear it, the more it gets to me in the sense that, you know what, you're doing a good thing just focusing on the inner work rather than, you know, the materialistic things that people tend to accumulate. And it is a journey for sure, because a lot of us get influenced by whatever that's going on in the world, whatever's going on around us. And I think it is going to take time. The key is to understand it. So, you know, you've given us great perspective there, and I really appreciate that. And today we're here to talk about resentment, which is probably something that when people hear about, they probably say, oh, resentment, how does that have to do with happiness anyway? So let's talk about that, you know. First of all, how would you define resentment? Because probably some people will say it's similar to anger, similar to frustration. I believe it's much different from that. And, you know, this topic, I'm sure you can talk about it at length, especially because, you know, you're into psychology. You've been doing it for such a long time. So what is your take on resentment?
Well, let me say that actually resentment can be related to anger. It doesn't have to get that far. So let me elaborate. Resentment is the perception that someone has done me wrong in some way. Now, I say perceived because the other person who committed this error may not have done it on purpose. There may have been no nasty or malicious intent. But it's the way an individual perceives something. The other part of it is that a person may have done something that you resent. But it's rarely the kind of thing that's lasting. It doesn't It doesn't have to sting unless you hold on to it. Unfortunately, there are people who have a very difficult time letting go of these resentments or of a resentment, whether it's perceived or not. It just may be because someone said something without even realizing, you know, people just don't think about what they say. And so if they say something, you know, the speaker believes that he's being harmless. And out of his mouth comes something that the other person, how dare he have said that to me? And he feels resentment. Meanwhile, the speaker has no idea at all. These things can build. There are also people who tend to collect resentments. Resentment and happiness can go together. You know, we're just human beings. We're not perfect. And yes, we can become resentful just because of what we either perceive or because of what someone said that they didn't mean to say. But it's the accumulation of resentment that becomes a problem that interferes with happiness. So no, resentment, feeling resentful about something in no way has to interfere with happiness. It could be this small speck of nothing in your life if you don't let it become more than a small speck. Unfortunately, it is sometimes difficult to let it go.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you mentioned there, especially the relationship between resentment and happiness. Like, they can coexist, but, you know, to what extent? Because I think from what I understand there, you know, resentment could be something that you hold on to, but it doesn't necessarily is something that is true sometimes. You know, people probably don't mean it when they say something or do certain things that maybe make you feel resentful. And so sometimes it just gets unresolved and it affects your own happiness because you're in your own head, basically. That's what sounds like what's happening.
You're in your own head, and it can become poisonous to yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So when we talk about resentment, it's a sort of a vague concept, right? Because obviously it's intangible. People know about it. They probably have used the word before. And like you're saying, it affects our happiness. They can coexist, but obviously it's going to affect our happiness. So what can people do to start looking out for signs of resentment? Like, you know, what are some common triggers of resentment that people should know about? Because sometimes they might not even think about it.
Well, it's hard to be, you know, everybody has different triggers. If a friend of yours, I can't think of specifics right now, but if a friend of yours says something that implies that your child is naughty, bad, really fresh. What? You know, that can sting. But, hey, wait a minute. That's my child you're talking about. It's very easy for a parent to resent that. Brings to memory another story. I was just a kid growing up in New York City playing with other kids. And there was someone's mother standing on the sidewalk who didn't like something I either said or did, I don't remember, so long ago. And what I do remember is that the mother called me a juvenile delinquent. Me, a juvenile delinquent. So that evening, I happened to tell my mother. I guess it bothered me, even though I was a kid. Well, my mother was very resentful. And the next day, she approached this lady and said something to the effect of, "My son is not a delinquent. Don't dare call him that." I think she said something like that. I wasn't there. That's the kind of thing that can make someone resentful, as it did my mother. And my mother was not a resentful person. And that was the end of it. It went no further. It made no difference in her life or in my life. I just happen to remember it now.
I think that's a definitely an interesting sort of case study that you mentioned there. And, you know, your mom actually said it out loud to that person. So in a way, it kind of gets resolved because, you know, they know about the fact that she also knows and she's not happy about it and she felt resentful about it. But in other cases, we also know, and this is exactly to the point that you mentioned earlier, sometimes we hold on to this sense of resentment about something. And it's just all in our head. And we don't even say it out loud. We don't even resolve it. So obviously, one of the strategies is to get that resolved, right? If you can, that would be better than holding on to it. But then I wonder, how do we know when we are, you know, holding on to a sense of resentment that is just in our head and is actually not a thing?
It's rare that a person would be unaware of their own resentment. Otherwise, we wouldn't call it resentment. Mm. So I think there is awareness, and it keeps going around in your head. That's what we mean by not letting go of it. It's like being obsessed with this insult.
Yeah.
Just recently, I mentioned to a good friend of mine something he said that I felt resentful about. But I told him nicely, and he said, "Oh, no, that's not what I meant. You misunderstood," and he explained it to me. It shed light on everything. My resentment was gone. Had I not said anything, it could have become poisonous, even ended this friendship, which would have been a big loss for both of us. And I had completely misunderstood. So the point is that it's when it keeps occupying your mind, you know, and some people have a very real tendency to be obsessive, and obsession means thinking about something repeatedly and not being able to let go of that thought. That's the kind of resentment that can become all-consuming.
Yeah, definitely. It's exactly that point that we were discussing earlier. You know, it's mainly because you don't resolve it, you don't say it out loud, and that can affect the relationship. And actually, you were mentioning relationship as one of the anchor for happiness earlier, right? And this resentment can actually damage relationships if you don't talk about it. I think feeling resentful is probably a pretty universal thing. You know, we definitely have felt it at least once or twice in our lives. And to be able to cope with it and understand it is more important than saying, you know, like, don't be resentful. That's harder. So I think one of the key strategies is definitely to talk it out, to resolve it with the person that you're feeling this sense of resentment towards. And there's also that part of forgiveness.
Forgiveness is everything. Well, Before I elaborate on forgiveness, which is deeply important, in talking it out with the other person, it's really important not to use the pronoun you, even pointing your finger. Well, you did this, you did that. You is one of the terrible pronouns in English, because such a three-letter word that can be so accusatory. So, excuse me, it's better to approach this sort of thing with, I didn't understand what you said the other day, or I need some clarification, or I sometimes get upset when people say such and so, opening the door for the other person to elaborate. But ultimately, it is forgiveness that makes all the difference in the world. When we use the word forgiveness, we have to be very careful. Forgiveness is powerful. But under the wrong set of circumstances, the resentful individual may find giving forgiveness humiliating, and that will only worsen things. If you know this other person well, and you are comfortable with saying, "Do you forgive me for having done that? I hope you do." Fine. But there are others who sometimes have to forgive in their mind. Instead of harboring the resentment, a good way to let it go is by saying to yourself, "No one's perfect. He or she made a mistake. I know they didn't intend to. I forgive them." That's in the circumstance where it may feel too humiliating to say, "I forgive you," or some variation of "I forgive you" directly to the person. So it depends. It depends on the individual who's doing the forgiving, as well as the individual who is being forgiven. Because if the receiver of the forgiveness is not a person open to receiving it, that can feel humiliating to the giver, to the person apologizing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I was actually going to ask you because I realized when we were talking about this that sometimes we don't even get to forgive that person. You know, something might happen. I remember reading this book on resentment a while ago, and this lady, she was talking about, you know, how she was actually resentful towards her own mother because of things that happened in their past, but she couldn't forgive her mother because the mother passed away. And, you know, like that's another piece of it, right? Which is why you were saying, like, we can do that, probably like a self-talk kind of thing. You forgive that person.
You know, that is profound. Yes. With all this business of, you know, people feeling resentful and not forgiving, we forget that life is short. We don't have forever. We are not God. We have a limited time on this earth, some more limited than others. So it's really important, that daughter, for example, to forgive her mother. Her mother passed away. She can forgive her in here. If you believe in an afterlife, you can ask her for forgiveness up in heaven. It depends on your belief system. But yes, in here, in your mind, yes, you can forgive your mother, your father, etc. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I think it helps.
Because hanging on to resentment, what's the old saying? It's like drinking poison, waiting for the other person to die. So, yeah, it's important to forgive. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, no, that's all good. I think that's a really good point. And, you know, I was just saying that it's so important to be able to practice this, no matter how hard it sounds, because for a lot of us, it's sometimes this emotion is so strong that it's kind of overwhelming and it's all consuming. And if we are talking about a deep-seated resentment, that's even harder, right? It's not something that happened yesterday and they're learning to forgive. Maybe this is something that has been in their life for such a long time and it gets built up. Keeps getting built up after each day or after years. And now it's even harder to do this work of forgiving. And yeah.
And the reason is that it can turn into hatred.
Yeah.
And both, let me point out that both holding on to resentment as well as hatred are so damaging to people's own health, to your cardiovascular system, to every aspect of your physical being. It literally is all-consuming, or can be, if we don't let it go.
Definitely. That's a really good point. And I think we've touched on the theory quite a bit. So now it's probably time to get a bit more practical. So let's go into our practice part to help our audience understand this in a more practical light. Because, you know, we talked about forgiveness and, you know, being able to forgive that person or that situation, whatever that might be. But it's probably something that needs a lot of practice and, you know, it needs to take time for people to actually get to as well. So for our audience who probably are, you know, they probably clicked on this episode because they are dealing with resentment themselves and now they don't know where to start. So what would be a practice that you recommend to them as a starting point to manage that resentment healthily and then be able to learn to forgive?
I think, in fact, this is another book I've been recently reading. A wonderful practice is going for a walk in nature. If there is a park nearby, or if you live near the woods, you know, even most cities, most urban centers have parks and streams and lakes and ponds where people can just take a walk and immerse themselves in nature. It is so healing to do that. Another practice that, you know, I do all of these things myself, is meditation, but specifically mindful meditation. Because mindfulness has to do with being aware of yourself and what you're doing to yourself. So, there, if everyone does a search on Google or whatever the platform you use for mindful meditation, you can find many podcasts that provide guided and unguided meditations. And for different purposes, there are meditations to relieve anxiety. There are meditations to help people sleep. There are meditations to help relieve stress, to help relieve resentment. Mindful meditation is a way of taking yourself away from here, these thoughts that drift into our heads constantly, and focus on, let's say, our breathing. The thoughts will come back, folks, right back. You know, I've heard people say to me, well, you know, I can't do this because my thoughts keep coming back. Yes, that's why you keep reminding yourself, breathe, breathe. So that is a practice everyone can get into once or twice a day that I highly recommend. Listening to soothing music. Well, you know, soothing music, everybody has their own taste. So what's soothing to me may not be to you. But listening to music is a wonderful way to just let go of stress. And I find, again, this is me. Everyone has to find their own way. I find reading, especially at bedtime, for me, that is such a joy. And so much so that it's a problem in a way, because in the process of reading, I fall off to sleep. Not because I'm bored, but I just enjoy it so much and feel so relaxed. Am I finding myself, wait, what did that sentence say? Don't fight it. Just go with it. You drift off into sleep. So those are some of the things I recommend.
Yeah, definitely. I really love those practices.
Yes. And those are the kinds of things you don't need money. You don't need wealth. You can do them. Go for walks. I don't care if you live in an urban area. Even if it's a bad area, walk during the day. Go for a long walk. It's enormously, enormously helpful. And in the end, here's where I come in. If nothing else seems to help, people like me are available. Going to psychotherapy. And psychotherapy is a great way to find relief.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing all those practices. And I do think it is important to seek help if, you know, you've done everything in your power, but it's hard to manage, right? Because there's no shame in asking for help when you need it. Sometimes it's just really all consuming and it's hard for you to manage by yourself. And I think that's where we really need to point out the need for accepting help. It's another thing that humans are really hard, not that great at doing, you know, accepting help. I know that, you know, from firsthand experience. So I'm saying
especially,
this to our audience.
Especially us men.
Interesting point of view. Okay, good to hear that from your perspective. And yeah, hopefully, you know, if our audience are listening in and they identify themselves as men, they also know that it's okay for them to accept help. Wonderful. Well, we are now at the end of the show. And as I mentioned to you earlier, we've got Open Mic, which is your open platform to talk about anything you are passionate about, which does not have to be related to this topic. I'm guessing by this point, you probably know exactly what you would like to share. So the floor is all yours, Alan.
You know, there are so many things, but, you know, I have my doggy. We always had dogs. You want happiness? Have a significant other who you love and have a dog. Dogs, they're just wonderful. And my wife and I went through a long period where we were training service dogs for wounded combat veterans. And these dogs were wonderful. Oh, so I'm actually drifting because I'm thinking psychotherapy again. One of the things I love especially about here in Colorado, is I take my dog out at 8 or 9 p.m. The sky is dark. And when it isn't cloudy, I look up and I see the heavens. I see the moon in its different phases. I see the different star formations, like the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, and so on. And sometimes there's a planet that's visible in the sky, and it just, I find it joyful. I guess that's why I like that podcast, Star Talk. The universe is just so fascinating. There's no planetarium, at least that I know of, near where I live. But in many places there are, and in New York City, there's the Hayden Planetarium. To look up and see their displays during their different programs, to me, that is joy. And there again, look up, see the universe. We are but small specks. Good. We're not as important as we think we are. When we look up and we see this vastness, and I don't care if you're an atheist or if you're a religious person, it is just magnificent. I guess if I had to choose another career, it would be to be an astrophysicist. Oh my God, just spectacular.
Yeah.
So Everyone, look up, go out late at night and look up.
Mm. Yeah. Well, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I think for a lot of us, we live in the city, it's harder to see stars. But I do remember going camping and just looking up and I could see the stars, I could see the galaxy. And I'm like, that is such a great feeling, you know, and we should all do that more often. I totally agree with you. It helps, you know, it helps with so many different things. And especially since we're on the topic of happiness, I'm sure that adds to our level of happiness, you know, no matter how you feel, you know, just spending time really admiring the stars really, really is amazing. I also love that.
And the whole planet is amazing. Just to see every spring, the colors, if you're in the city, unless there is a park, but in the fall, to see the leaves turn color, it's unbeatable.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. So what a beautiful message to close with. And we've really appreciated your time being here today. You know, I really enjoy talking to you and listening to your insights. And if our audience would like to find out more about your work, where should they go?
Well, if they can go to oneword.com, dottalkpsychotherapy.com. Literally, one word, dottalkpsychotherapy.com. And you will find my articles in one place or another. Or look up Alan N. Schwartz or Alan N. Schwartz, PhD. You will find my articles. And if you want to email me, not the psychotherapy, but just to email me, Dr. A N as in Nathan, A-N Schwartz, S. In other words, Drans, D-R-A-N-S, Ph.D. at AOL.com. Send me a message. I'll be happy to answer it. Or a question. I'll be happy to answer it. Nothing to do with psychotherapy. I'm not looking for clients, I'm not looking to make money. So just know that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being so open about, allowing people to reach out to you. I'm sure our audience would appreciate your insights. Thank you so much again for joining us today. I've had a great time and definitely learned a few new tips to manage resentment whenever that arises.
You have been listening to CeraBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by the Happiness Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 life management perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website, ha.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Lu Ngo. Thanks for tuning in.